Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, thanks for taking a listen. I'm Ian Parkinson, and this is the Ruler podcast. So the route of the 2018 Tour de France has been published, and already it's been pored over, picked at, and pulled apart by every expert and amateur around the world. But that is not going to stop us doing exactly the same thing. And to help me, I'm joined by the Ruler editor, Andy McGrath. Now, Andy, you like a bit of poring over a Michelin map, don't you?
I do, yeah. Even though I normally rely on the sat nav these days. But there's something about maps. I'm a bit of a map fetishist. I've got a fair few in my home, and my girlfriend isn't such a fan of having so many of them on the walls anyway.
And Michelin maps in particular, actually. I think Michelin maps of France always smell of adventure to me.
That's right. And the chevron roads are kind of picking out where to ride and where not to ride, maybe, if your legs are hurting.
So, first things first, 2018, the general consensus seems to be that, yet again, it is another route for climbers and not for time trialists. And frankly, it's another route for Chris Froome to lose, really.
That's right. I mean, it's hard to kind of tailor any route particularly for a certain rider, but yeah, but more TT kilometres would mean it favours Froome and maybe Port even more. Really, whatever we say about the route, it is still how the riders race it. Like, this looks like a kind of pretty innovative, modern route, introducing things like gravel road sections and a very short road stage, I think, in the... Where is it? It's in the...
It's towards the end, isn't it? Yeah, in the Pyrenees.
That's nice to see. It should encourage attacking racing, hopefully. But if Team Sky and Froome have really strangled the life out of the race and their rivals, it might not mean anything. But that's kind of the fun of poring over it now. We just don't know what will happen.
It would be nice one year that the ASO announced a route and Chris Froome said, "I don't like the look of that. I'm really not sure how we're going to cope with that." And it is becoming a bit predictable.
I wonder one year, especially if he wins this race, will he target the Giro that is mountainous? And he started his career living and racing in Italy a lot, so maybe that's one for 2019 for him.
So there's nothing really revolutionary next year. There's two really long plane transfers, aren't they? Basically from one end of France to the other, towards the start and towards the end. But across the 21 stages, there's a few things to look out for. It's almost entirely in France this year, isn't it? I think they're going to Spain for about 5 minutes on one stage. But other than that, it's pretty much entirely in France, which is, you know, becoming less usual.
That's true, yeah. I think they're almost alternating a foreign Grand Départ with tours that are virtually entirely in France. There's probably more money to be made, quite frankly, from going to, say, Utrecht or Dusseldorf or London. But it is nice to see a very French Tour de France.
So there's no prologue. They start in the Vendée. Nice part of France. That could be a good place to spot some of the racing. A couple of ordinary stages. Then on day three, there's a team time trial around Cholet. That might upset things a bit. It's quite hilly around Cholet. I've ridden around Cholet. It's quite surprisingly hilly for a team time trial.
Right. It's longish. I mean, 35 km. That'll set the tone, and that will be a change of the yellow jersey there. BMC won the TTT last time. It was in the Tour. In 2015. I don't find them the most exciting to watch, but actually, pro riders, several have told me that it is one of the finest arts you can perfect, is riding that pace line and riding on the limit the entire time and not blowing up, either yourself or the riders with you. You're kind of only as strong as a fifth rider to cross a line. So, yeah, that'll be very interesting to see what happens there.
And it's not something that pro road riders get to practice a lot, actually, is it? It's pretty unusual.
It's not. No, there's only, I'm trying to think, there's probably a handful every year in the World Tour. So, and it also adds kind of another dimension as to which riders you pick, because they're down to 8 rather than 9 in every Grand Tour next year. And you've got a lot of things to plan for. The cobbles in Roubaix, this team time trial, kind of shepherding a leader on the flat, helping them in the mountains. And you've only got 7 teammates. Who do you pick? I mean, that'll be Team Sky, BMC, 82R's big worry.
Although I suppose for a big team like Sky, it's possibly easier to pick the right 8 people than for a smaller team in some ways, isn't it?
Perhaps, yeah. And for Team Sky, it's easier for them to step up. Like Kwiatkowski can ride on the hills, he can ride in the mountains, he can do a team time trial. He's that good, he's that versatile. It helps, doesn't it?
I suppose people will also be hoping that actually 8 riders per team will mean, possibly might mean fewer crashes in those sort of early stages when there's, you know, everybody in the peloton is still there. There's a few nervous first-timers and there's loads of road furniture and roundabouts to get around. Possibly the smaller teams might make a difference there.
They have reduced the size, but I haven't seen any kind of data, frankly, that suggests a bunch of 176 riders is safer than 198. I think even if it was down to half the size, the sheer nervous nature of the first week would still probably cause crashes. But obviously, I would hope that everyone gets away unscathed, but it seems every year there's a kind of decisive, defining crash, unfortunately, normally in the first 5 days, 6 days.
Well, also in the first 5 or 6 days, they go up that sort of northwest corner of France, in Brittany, around Brest and Quimper. That's going to be windy, I imagine. It normally is, even in July. And again, that could be an occasion for a big split in the pack. There could be some time lost there, couldn't there?
That's right. Even in the first 2 stages down on the Loire coast, that could be windy. Also, the Quimper stage, a stage from Lorient, which is near Warren Barguil's hometown, that's got a slight hilly finish, which would be perfect for Sagan. And they've got some Ardennes-esque short, steep climbs. So that's not easy either. That's going to hurt most of the sprinters, pure sprinters, too much.
And the finish to Mer de Bretagne, that's sort of short and steep, isn't it?
It is. I mean, for what I can remember, you can see the Mer de Bretagne from about 15 kilometres away. It's an arrow straight road that looks visually very impressive on TV. I think Alexis Viermo won there last time. I think it was 2 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
And that'll be probably the first skirmish of the contenders for the race, I'd imagine. And perhaps Sagan, again, if he isn't kicked out.
If he's not kicked out in the first 5 days, yeah.
That's right.
So after that is the bit that I imagine a lot of people are looking forward to. It's up to the northeast corner, and it's basically the really horrible bits of Paris-Roubaix. All in one go, really.
It is. I mean, we should point out some of the cultural highlights as well in the first week.
Of course.
In Brittany, it's a cycling hotbed. You're pretty close to where Bernardino, Louison, Bobet grew up. Chartres, the finish for stage 7, has an amazing Gothic cathedral. I actually popped in there in 2012 because the race-defining time trial at the end, where Wiggins confirmed his win, finished there. And it's incredible.
UNESCO heritage site, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then the race gets to the Nord, to these cobbles. I think it's 15 sectors, which is basically the last 15 of Paris-Roubaix, minus the very worst, and minus the whole of Mons en Pivelle, and I think minus the Carrefour de l'Arbre. But it's
still pretty grim.
Extremely grim. I think this is the hardest cobbles there's been in the Tour for at least 20 years. And there's so many variables. Like, what if it rains?
I suppose in mid-July they're hoping it's going to be dry, but it could be wet.
This seems to be the stage, maybe even more than the mountains, that's whetting the appetite for most of the fans. It's quite a small thing, but team car order will be really important there. For example, I think last time they were on the cobbles 2 years ago, Thibaut Pinot spent 30 seconds just waiting for his team car because FDJ were 15th in the team classification. That can be the difference between winning and losing at all, let alone even crashing and breaking a collarbone or something like that. So that will be required viewing before the World Cup final, which I believe is the same day.
I think it is, yeah, I think it's the same day. If it's dry, I guess the expectation is that Sky will look after Froome. He's proved he can do it on cobbles before. But as Bernardino has always pointed out, you know, it's a bit of a lottery, that, you know, riding over those cobbles. Anything can go wrong, and you can't really be sure of anything, can you?
It's as easy as losing a teammate's will, and then he could be in trouble. The other thing is the cobbles in the Tour recently have never come so near to the mountains. I mean, they've got a rest day, and they're straight into it with a stage from Annecy to Le Grand Bornand.
Because after they get to Roubaix, the sprinters may as well go home, aren't they? There's pretty, well, not much left for them until they get to Paris.
Slim pickings, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a rest day, and there's just a really long flight from the Belgian border, basically, all the way down to Annecy. Beautiful area, but then, yeah, you're into the Alps, and it's the Croix de Fer, Alpe d'Huez, usual suspects, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. There's stage 11 is from Albertville to La Rosière, which I think is a new climb for the Tour. They included it in the Tour de l'Avenir a few years ago, and that'll be interesting. That, I think, it's long and fairly shallow, but there are some harder, fairly new climbs before it. I think it's a day of three cols. So you have this combination of untested ascents and the classic, you know, Croix de Fer, Madeleine, Alpe d'Huez. That should start to narrow down the contenders to 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 when they're out the Alps.
So after the Alps, it's over to the southwest through the Massif Central, and then we're into the Pyrenees. And again, in the Pyrenees, it's the usual suspects, the Tourmalet, the Col d'Aspin, the Aubisque. Now, the stage from Pau finishes in Trie-sur-Bèze, and I know you're particularly interested in the events in Trie-sur-Bèze.
It's not the most riveting stage, probably, for viewers, because it's flattish. But Trie-sur-Bèze is a very small village where, in 1975, they had the first Porc-Élide, which is a festival about pigs, all around pigs. It was popularised by Eurotrash about 15-odd years ago because some of the competitions involve the cri de cochon, which is human beings squealing like a pig, and the best one wins, and impersonating a pig, so dressing up as a pig. And they've got to really ham it up, pun intended, by performing the pig's birth, reproduction, and death. So their whole life cycle, basically. So it's very silly, very fun. Unfortunately, the last one was in 2011.
Oh no.
It doesn't go on anymore. I know, devastating. And it's in August anyway, so it doesn't coincide with the Tour.
Still, in spirit, there'll be a lot of pork-related activity, I imagine, in Trie-sur-Bèze.
It really rounds up a great week for gourmands because you've got the Rhone Valley at the end of the Alps. You have Valence and Saint-Paul-Trois-Châteaux. There's some good red wine to be had there. Then you're whisking through Cassolet country. If you ever had Cassolet on the Tour, it's just a mismatch because it's normally 30 degrees down there and you're having this meaty heart attack in a bowl that's very hot normally as well when it's served. But it is nice after a long day on the Tour.
The riders will be spending some time in Lourdes. Have you been to Lourdes?
I have, very briefly.
It is a very strange city.
But at least, I mean, that's a very scenic area for the Tour.
It's an amazing area, yeah.
There's going to be the Tourmalet, which has great panorama, and Périgueux as well. I think the Tour finished there last year, and there was a great photo that morning of it. I think it finishes on a runway, and all the clouds were sitting below it and were just blanketing the horizon, basically. It was fantastic.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the organisers of the Tour and the TV companies are well aware that a lot of the appeal of watching the tour over those 3 weeks is actually the scenery and what's going on, because, you know, for a large part of the day, the racing may be relatively uneventful.
For most of the first 10 days, first 9 stages, it's all going to be as much about the Chateau as the Wanty Group Gobert rider who's gone on a poor solo breakaway for 10 kilometres.
Now, the 65-kilometre stage, 38 of which are uphill, that's an interesting one. We've had short stages in the Tour before, haven't we? But not for a while.
And not as short as this. This is stage 17, Bagnères de Luchon to the Col de Porte, which is a new finish, I think, for the Tour. Because it's been to Saint-Lary-Soulon before, several times. That is going to be really interesting. That's going to be full on from the gun. I don't envy anyone who isn't a climber, let alone the sprinters. And the Gruppetto could be time cut that day.
Yeah, because the good climbers are just going to go for it right from the start, aren't they? And flat out. For 65K, you can. Well, they can.
That's 2 hours of racing, I suppose. And that could shake up the overall. It could not change anything. But I like this. This is an innovation right here, I'd say. Having that very short and sharp could be the way to go in the future, rather than, I think we've seen the end of the 250-kilometre schleps we had maybe 20 years ago in the mountains.
Now, the possibly crucial, possibly not, but possibly crucial final time trial on the penultimate day ends up in Espelette, where the pepper comes from, of course. The Espelette is the home of the Espelette pepper, the sort of medium-sized red peppers which you see drying in their hundreds on all those sort of tourist postcards of the Basque Country. And Espelette peppers are, I think, an AOC product, so a bit like Camembert and Champagne. You can only get Espelette pepper from that particular quite small area. I'm sure that will be preying on the minds of the riders on that final time trial. There are loads of pepper-related festivals in the area, so maybe, you know, if they have a disappointing day in the time trial, they can console themselves. So after that, they're back on the plane. They're up to Huile, north of Paris, for the final run into the Champs-Élysées. Only 115K, and the race will be decided by then. At this stage, what's your thinking? Another, you know, a fifth one for Froome?
It's hard to see past him. I think there's doubts over whether Tom Dumoulin will race this tour. It doesn't seem particularly suited to his abilities. But I think it'll be the same main contenders. Richie Porte, if he can not crash out. He was interviewed in Latest Ruler, of course. Nairo Quintana and Romain Bardet.
And no Contador this year?
No Contador, which is a shame, because some of these stages, like the 65km one...
They're made for him, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
OK, thanks, Andy. In a moment, I'll be talking to the UK Managing Director of the cycle clothing company, ASOS. Now, if you want a reminder of just how much cycling has changed in the past few years, especially in the UK, take a walk down Regent Street in London, one of the most famous shopping streets in the world, until it reaches into the gentleman's clubland around St James. Within a few hundred yards, you'll find two smart stores, one for the Italian bike brand Pinarello, one for the Swiss clothing company ASOS. Now, if you're as old as me, you'll remember ASOS being among the first to develop Lycra and other modern materials for cycling kit, taking us out of the dark days of woolen shorts and jerseys and chamois made of, well, chamois. ASOS previewed their 2018 range at the London store this week, and their UK Managing Director, Richard Todd, picked out some highlights.
The first thing is the expansion of the Millet range of product. So the Millet range is... entry level for ASOS, so you're still getting a very good high performance product at a slightly lower price point. And we've expanded that range to introduce new jerseys, long sleeve jerseys, more sort of intermediate type spring fall jerseys, as well as a lightweight shell and that sort of thing. So that's one of the highlights. The other highlight is the Equipe RS rain jacket, or the Schlosshund, which is a sort of race-focused, very performance-focused, packable rain jacket, which has all of the features that you'd want in a rain jacket at a price which we think is very fair for a very performance-focused product.
That did get a lot of attention, actually. It's a lovely rain jacket, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a lovely rain jacket. I've been sneaking mine out of the sample box and riding wearing it for the last sort of 4 or 5 months and hoping that I don't get papped.
What are the sort of big technological advances at the moment in cycle clothing? Yeah, how much has it advanced over the past couple of years?
Well, the clothing itself has advanced in many ways. A lot of it's to do with the materials. At ASOS, we use proprietary materials, so we are constantly researching what products we can find in the market, what materials we can find in the market, and how they can be applied, or developing new materials themselves. The rain jacket that I just mentioned is a good example of this. The material that we're using there has a remarkable amount of stretch, which means that you can go one size smaller and therefore it doesn't flap around or anything like that. And I think that one of the things that we do, which is fairly unique to us, is we come to these proprietary materials from a cycling standpoint. So we're not taking materials out of the outdoor world or something that may have been developed for mountaineering and then giving it a cycling cut and calling it a cycling jacket. We are looking for materials that work specifically for a very defined use in a very sort of narrow range of conditions that you get when you are riding.
In Formula One, people always say that the technology that's used in Formula One will spread back to the cars that you and I drive on the road. Is it the same in cycling clothing? Does the sort of experience you get and the feedback you get from the pro teams help?
I think it's true with some brands. We work with the BMC Racing team. And we worked with the BMC Racing team. We began working with them this year. When we were originally approached and when we had our first discussion, we were approached by some other teams as well. And their philosophy was that we would give them money and they would put our logo on product which they were buying OEM from different factories. So essentially, the manufacturer of the product never changed. That's not something that we are happy with. We are ASOS and our product is designed with performance in mind and it's very performance focused. So we see the BMC Racing team as being an extension of our R&D lab, and there are the Equipe RS rain jacket is a demonstration of that. There are a number of elements such as the cut of the cuff, the double zip, which have come specifically from requests from the BMC Racing team. There's another product which is with the BMC Racing team at the moment, which is the Liberty jacket. Now the Liberty jacket is something which they have prototypes of, and that I've seen photographs of them wearing prototypes and different iterations of this product. I myself am yet to see it and get our hands on it, and it's still a couple of years away. So that is a clear demonstration of how we are using them as part of our R&D.
Can you give us a clue? What's the idea behind the Liberty jacket?
I think it's flexibility. It's one of those jackets which needs to work in a wider range of conditions than anything else that we have or anything else on the market, so that when you are racing in a race like one of the early spring classics, that you're not having to take a rain jacket, you're not having to take anything else, that you've got something that's supremely breathable, water repellent, etc., etc. But I'm still yet to get my hands on it.
There's obviously been a sort of revolution in cycling, particularly in the UK over the past 10 years or so. A huge boom in the number of recreational cyclists out there. As far as you can see, is that continuing, or is that boom sort of dying off? Is the market for high-end cycling kits still pretty buoyant?
I don't think the market's dying off at all. I think that what happened is that there are a lot of people who came to cycling over the last 10 years. They are riding, they're riding week in, week out, and they are as demanding and performance-focused as anybody else. In terms of the market for high-end clothing, I sometimes wonder what high-end means, because at ASOS we are a performance-focused brand. Performance is at the heart of what we do. If a piece of clothing performs well, then you're more likely to be comfortable. If you're more comfortable, then you're going to spend longer riding. If you spend longer riding, you're going to get faster and you're going to enjoy your time more. High-end sort of suggests luxury. I question whether or not it should be considered a luxury to have a garment that is so good that you don't think about it.
Sure, but not everyone can afford the prices of yourself and some of the other sort of higher end clothing companies. So I just wonder how many people there are that can still afford to spend that money on their kit.
It's a good question. The question that I always ask is, first of all, I don't think that our product is extremely expensive. If we're looking at the Millet range, for example, the shorts are £110, the jersey is £85. Assos isn't as expensive as it used to be to get into. The second thing that I would say is that actually comparatively, for something that you spend so much time in and is so fundamental to your comfort on the bike, in terms of a pair of shorts, if you look at that and then you look at what people demand for a pair of cycling shoes or what people demand for a saddle, there's a bit of an imbalance. So yes, I concede that the product may appear expensive to some, but when we look at our prices, you look at our crash replacement policy, our repair policy, which is within the first 2 years, that actually you're getting a product which is tremendously good value.
One of the things that's become very clear over the past couple of years is that you're very keen to expand your role in the women's market in the UK in particular. How important is that to you at the moment?
We're a brand that are trying to deliver very high quality performance products to as many cyclists as we possibly can. One of the things that struck me about Assos when I joined the company was that the women's products that we have are built with exactly the same care and attention, with the same performance focus in mind as the rest of our range. In the past, I will concede that our communication did ourselves a disservice and also did a disservice to the female market.
There were some very questionable adverts a few years ago.
There were indeed, but it's something that we have owned and it's something that we have addressed and that we have changed our approach, and we're looking forward with the introduction of more products for the female market, different ambassadors, different photography. So it's something that I think that we stood up to and really held our hands up to.
Richard Todd of Assos. So, all that remains is the Ruler quiz. Last time, we asked how many times did Chris Boardman win the National Hill Climb Championship? The answer was 4 times, and the winner of the box set of Cycling Climbs of Britain books was Mark Caffin. Well, this time, the prize is 2 tickets to the Ruler Classic event in London. The tickets are for Saturday, November the 4th. And the question is, Mer de Bretagne was the finish of Stage 4 in the 2011 Tour de France. Who won that stage? The Mer de Bretagne was the finish of Stage 4 in the 2011 Tour de France. Who won that stage? Go to the Ruler website, check out the page for this podcast, and full details of how to enter should be there. For our next podcast, we'll be at the Ruler Classic in London with lots of star names lining up to talk to us. That's the plan. See you then.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.